Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Betsy Stark in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Another tough job report last Friday. Those caught in the wave of unemployment, one in 10 Americans, are buckling under the financial strain and the emotional fallout. Unemployment can also chip it away at a person's physical well-being. This hour, On Point, the emotional and physical toll of unemployment. You can join our conversation. Are you or a loved one struggling with joblessness? How are you coping? What has it meant for your family life? Write a comment at our website, onpointradio.org. Joining me now in the studio is Rena Dubin, a psychologist who has been in private practice for 25 years. Welcome to On Point, Rena.
Hello, nice to be here.
And with me from Princeton, New Jersey is Henry Farber, professor of economics at Princeton University and an expert on labor market issues. Henry Farber, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Betsy.
Henry, let me start with you because the numbers paint a picture of a deep problem. More than 6 million Americans out of work for more than 6 months, and those are the long-term jobless who are still actively looking for work. How big a problem are we looking at here?
We're looking at the largest problem in the labor market since the Great Depression. While the overall unemployment rate is no higher than it was in the large recession in the early 1980s, within any skill group, the unemployment rate is actually higher. But as you pointed out, even more important than that is the fact that the durations of unemployment are unprecedentedly large.
And describe for us the economic stress this kind of long-term joblessness has created.
Well, quite a large fraction of American households live paycheck to paycheck. They don't have much in the way of resources or really much access to what I would think of as reasonably priced credit. They tend to borrow on their credit cards and so on. So that any interruption in the income stream causes immediate financial stress. They just don't have 6 months of income and savings so that they can dip into that to help them over the hump. So it causes real problems almost immediately.
And Rena, there's research that shows that no other circumstance produces such a big and swift decline in mental health and well-being than involuntarily being out of work for such a long time. What's the psychology at work here?
Well, I think part of it is that we don't expect that, that many of us believe that if we developed some skills and went out in the workforce that we'd be able to make a living. So to be in this unknown period of not being able to get a job really attacks our sense of what we can believe in.
And the feelings of loss have been likened to a death in some cases. Is it really that profound?
Sure, because it really affects our fundamental sense of what we can trust. And so it kind of shakes up our world.
A loss of self-esteem, a loss of confidence and
what we can count on. Yeah.
Henry, as you say, people come into this with very little financial cushion. That must only add to the stress.
Yes, I'm sure it does. It is offset to some extent by unemployment insurance benefits for those who've been employed for a reasonable length of time. But it, of course, the fact that you have money problems almost immediately and building over time certainly has to lead to stress.
And even I want to read to you from because we started to hear immediately from our website On Point Radio from people who are dealing with being unemployed and underemployed. We heard from I was a software consultant making $100,000 a year with degrees in electrical and software engineering. Now I make $15 an hour pulling weeds and digging ditches. I'm over 50 and the work is really more than my body can take. And this from another listener. After working straight from the age of 19 to 57, got laid off, severe depression, daily panic attacks, suicidal thoughts. And even though I have some contract work, it has forever scarred me. I now know the hell of mental depression. Rena, these people are describing a drop into deep despair.
Yeah, and it sounds very profound, and it is that way for many, many people because we're not sure, again, what we can count on. And I think the sense of how long, you know, if somebody said to us it's going to go along for this amount of time, we can sort of rally around it, but it's unknown right now. So I think that adds the unease.
And we hear often that people's identities are very much tied up with their jobs. Is that true for men and women equally, or more true for men?
Well, that may be somewhat generational about more true and less true, but certainly for most of us, feeling purposeful, feeling we have some value is there. I think one of the differences between men and women, if we're generalizing, is that, you know, it's been a little more okay for women to talk about their worries or their insecurities. It's a bigger thing when men have to kind of live with that and maybe keep all that inside.
Let's go to our viewers, to our listeners. We're starting to hear from them. Kevin is calling from Newburgh, Indiana. Kevin, welcome to On Point.
Welcome. Thank you.
What's your experience been?
As soon as I went on unemployment, I went into survival mode, and my whole emotional well-being was changed. So all of a sudden, I was desperate for work, obviously, because the unemployment insurance paid a third of what my income was originally, and didn't have a lot of reserves, and stopped eating properly. I stopped going to the gym almost immediately, and just really went into survival mode, and it changed my whole outlook and perspective on life.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. Thanks for describing that to us. And Rena, this is someone who's describing a real physical impact from the loss of income and I guess the loss of health benefits, too.
Right. So first I want to say what an understandable response that is, because it's new. It's new. You know, these people who've called in that you've read before and this man, this is a new experience. And we don't have a lot of skills on board yet. So, it's kind of like getting caught in a big wave. Over time, most people do start to find their balance and start to find their way. But in the short term, it leaves us feeling unsettled and confused and scared.
Let's hear from another caller how she's been coping. Donna is calling from Buchanan, Michigan. Welcome to On Point, Donna.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to tell you that I've been without a job now for almost 2.5 years, and we went from a two-income family, I'm 60 years old, by the way, two incomes to one income and unemployment, but I'm one of those 99ers, and now there's no unemployment. My husband makes enough money that we certainly can't get any help from anywhere. So we've gone through our retirement, through our savings. We're even selling, household objects or things that might be of value to try to get by. And so right now, I'm the one that's at home, and my husband's traveling on the road constantly because it's his job, and it keeps us, in food and keeps rent going. We have lost our house. We still do have our car. And what I'm doing is trying to volunteer as much as I can and use the skill set that I have to try to keep from losing my mind. And by the way, Facebook is a great tool.
Donna, thank you so much for your call. And Henry, tell us about these 99ers, these people who have exhausted their unemployment benefits after receiving the maximum number of extensions, which takes them up to 99 weeks of benefits. Is there a place they can turn?
Well, there really in the United States, there really isn't much of a place to turn beyond that. The 99ers, this is a new phenomenon in this recession because, frankly, the recession is about 2 years old, maybe a little bit more, and an awful lot of people who lost jobs in 08 and early 09 aren't quite to that point yet. But frankly, the U.S. does not have what I think of as an adequate social safety net for people who are long-term unemployed or people who haven't been unemployed. A group we haven't talked about are new entrants to the labor force. I would not want to be a new graduate today looking for a job. And if you don't find a job, there is no unemployment insurance because you have no employment history, and we have no programs for them too.
Rena,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Rena, what does it do to a young person who graduates full of expectation and ambition and is essentially stopped dead in their tracks?
Well, and again, it undermines their confidence. It often means they're staying at home longer, so they can feel like they're younger than they really are. It delays moving out. All those tasks of emancipating and starting to set up a life are now thwarted.
And how do you recover from that, and how do you cope through that period?
Well, some of that, again, has some variance. It depends on the family. It depends on the resources in that person. I think staying active in whatever ways, being involved. What we tend to do, like this earlier caller described, when that first wave of feeling scared and upset is we tend to withdraw and start to shut down and isolate. And if we do that for a short term, until we kind of get our sea legs, that's okay. But if we're doing that over the long term, obviously nobody knows we're out there. So then it's more likely that we can really start to spin in it.
And Henry, these young people can end up at a permanent economic disadvantage from that late start too, can't they?
Yes, I think that's going to be one of the biggest consequences of this recession. The early years in the labor market, when you first enter, before you've established a lot of social obligations and so on, are years where workers change jobs quite a bit. And that's normal because you're looking for a good fit, both in terms of employer and occupation and industry. And those years are going to go by without these workers having the opportunity, these young people having the opportunity to explore in a relatively low-cost way. And the evidence suggests they're going to suffer for many years.
This is On Point. I'm Betsy Stark, in for Tom Ashbrook. Millions of Americans have been out of work for months, and we are talking about the impact of this long-term joblessness on their bodies and minds. We're talking with Rena Dubin, a psychologist in private practice outside of Boston, and with Henry Farber, professor of economics at Princeton University and an expert on labor market issues. And Rena, when you're without a job for a long time, you have families that go essentially from a middle-class lifestyle to facing the prospect of homelessness. And this is something that affects, obviously, not just the person who's lost a job, but the whole family.
Right.
Talk to me about
that. Well, so obviously it brings in a lot of fear and also a lot of stress in the relationships because the things that we're supporting people aren't there, and there's whatever problems relationships have, and we all have them, are now under that much more pressure. So marital discord can go up, fighting can go up, withdrawing from each other, blaming, those kinds of things can go up, and then that's going to affect children who are looking for what to hang on to.
So their sense of that kind of bedrock security of being able to know that their parents are going to be able to provide for them is challenged.
Right. And when children see adults who are off kilter, then that adds to their sense of stress. Yeah.
Let's hear from another caller. Jody is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Jody, welcome to On Point. What would you like to say today?
Thank you. My sister is 50 years old, and she's a new graduate RN, and she jumped into the education system after many years because there was such a shortage of nurses, and her graduating class of 09 is 44% without jobs, and she's been one of those 44%. And I just wanted to say how it's affected our whole extended family because my father is getting older. He's so stressed about what to become of her. My husband and I have discussed whether she'll be involved in our household, my brother and his wife. She's now living out of state with an uncle. And I will just say, thank God, after 18 months of looking, she got a job last Friday, July 29th, before her house was to be taken on August 1st. So it's just caused a lot of stress. A lot of us are seeing therapists or taking medications or things that we wouldn't have been had she been working all along.
Thank you for your call, Jody. And Henry, it does seem that absent more of an infrastructure provided by the government for these long-term jobless, so you see them turning to extended family and friends as the safety net.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. It's particularly true of the younger people who, as was pointed out, stay home longer. Now that may cause its own family stresses. Rena could speak to that. But what's also true is that the story that we just heard about the 50-year-old who went back to school, that's a reasonably common story now, because when you don't have a job, it's a relatively low-cost way of going back to of getting education. You don't give up income because you don't have a job. And I would say take heart from that story, because while the woman had trouble finding the job, she trained in a field where there's a lot of demand in general, and she did find something. And I think that's a positive sign. People are investing in themselves.
Marina, do you want to add to that?
Well, that was a nice ending. So we like hearing those things. And also that even though it was stressful on the family, she did have people she was connected to who were trying to look out for her. And, you know, that may have made some difference in her ability to persevere. Those supports really matter.
And some people do describe that, and I don't want to overstate that or suggest that there are too many silver linings here, but one thing you do hear described is that reconnection mm-hmm. with family and an understanding of just how important it is as a lifeline.
Well, I think that is one of the silver linings, and I hear you about let's not overstate that while people are really struggling and suffering. But I think to the degree that it pushes us to reexamine our priorities and what's really important, and some of the materialism or some of the things that we thought we needed, for that to be reassessed, I don't think that's all bad. And for our younger generation to be coming into the world, maybe not taking things for granted, that's not such a bad thing either.
Let's hear from Nathan calling us from Springfield, Vermont. Nathan, welcome to On Point. What's your story?
Well, in 2001, I was an engineer for a Fortune 500 company, and I left at the beginning of 2001 to finish my graduate degree in business. And by the time I graduated at the end of 2001, of course, no one was hiring any graduate degrees or engineers in the Northeast. The bottom just fell out of everything. And I contend that this downturn did not start in 2008. It started, you know, back in 2001. And I've sent out hundreds of resumes over the years. I've been underemployed since 2001. And I hear a lot of people, you know, and I just want to tell them to suck it up. You know, I started a painting company. I became a professional musician and a stand-up comic. You know, I made a dollar any way I could. And, you know, it sucked. You know, I had two cars die on me last month. And my mom had to buy me a car. I'm 40 years old. But you know, I'm surviving.
And all right.
I'm honestly getting a little tired of all the whining.
Okay. Nathan, thank you for your call. Henry, I want to ask you about this notion of the man session, because more men than women have lost their jobs in this recession by the numbers, particularly in construction and manufacturing and finance. Are those jobs coming back? What's the outlook for those workers?
It depends on your time horizon. It appears that finance is coming back already. I'm not sure how happy I am about that particular industry, given its role in the recession in the first place. The construction industry, which is a heavily male-dominated industry, is going to take longer to come back, partly because there's an inventory out there of already built structures that people are going to want to use before they invest in new structures. I know here in central New Jersey, there's a glut of warehouse and office space, for example. And I know that in the Sun Belt, in many cities, there's a glut of new housing construction. And it's going to be hard for the construction industry to come back with that overhanging. That being said, one of the things the government could do and isn't really doing very much of right now is fairly aggressively invest in infrastructure at the state and local level in ways that could employ a lot of these workers.
Well, let's bring another voice into this conversation. Joining us now from Toms River, New Jersey, is Dwight Frazee, who has been living through this struggle for 2 years. He lost his job as a construction worker in 2008. His wife lost her job a year ago. He's exhausted his unemployment benefits, now expects to lose his home. Dwight, thank you for being here today.
Hi, Betsy.
Can you describe for us how this two-year stretch without a steady job has changed your life?
Well, the level of stress you can't even begin to put into words. You know, I'm 50 years old, in good physical shape, been a union construction worker my whole life, built all the casinos in Atlantic City. I've never had this level of stress. I've worked in nuclear power plants, worked at Princeton University for the Department of Defense, built in a fusion test reactor. I was always a hard worker, employed, living the American dream. But what this has done to me is it boils my blood. It has really, after 2 years, come out to the level of anger at this point. I'm angry about what our government has done to us. When I say us, I'm talking about the middle class, working class Americans who have taken the full brunt of what's been happening for many years now. The outsourcing of American jobs overseas, they've wiped out the working class, manufacturing. I was lucky enough to be in construction, so I kept working, but we've all seen it happening, and it's because of just like what caused this recent collapse. We have the laws in place to monitor Wall Street. Those laws weren't enforced is what came out in the end. The laws were already on the books. They didn't enforce it, and the same is true with everything that's been going on all these years. It's greed, it's corruption, it's our elected officials not having a sense of being in touch with the middle class. Years ago, my dad was a union construction worker. He raised a family on his single income. My mom was able to stay at home and raise us. But now, in my family, the world has changed where both the husband and wife both have to work. The level of income and wages has not risen with the level of cost of living.
So you're angry that you're not going to be able to have as good a life, the kind of life that you worked for, that or that your father was
right.
was able to have.
It.
Yeah. What about your wife? Hard. What about your wife and your 5-year-old daughter? How has the stress of this situation and the pressure that you live with every day affecting them?
It affects us in enormous ways. You know, to see me, I do my best to insulate my 5-year-old daughter from the realities of this, what's going on in this world. We try to insulate her and keep her in a happy home, even though we're on the verge of losing our home that we worked so hard for. My wife and myself, we have, you know, I'm a Irish Catholic, ex-football player, construction worker that does get emotional at times, but I'm also a Christian and a good Catholic, and I always try to keep things in perspective, but I'm telling you that the anger is all being directed at our elected officials and that I hold them responsible, but as far as the personal family life, it's almost destroyed our marriage a couple times, you know, but I'm not going to let that happen, and my wife isn't going to let it happen. But if it wasn't for our strong faith and belief in each other, it would absolutely have destroyed our marriage by now. And I can only imagine what other families are going through that don't have that good foundation.
Dwight, stand by just for a second. Rena, when you hear this story of the strain on a marriage, the anger, and also trying to insulate your children from this, can you effectively do that, or children kind of figure out what's going on? How do you deal with that piece of it?
Well, first, I just want to say I really can hear the sense of betrayal around what Dwight hoped life would be and worked so hard for and how powerful that is. And then to your question around how much can we insulate children when, in fact, that's how we feel and how much can they sense it, they do sense it. And so I think to the degree that we can say something matter-of-fact and straightforward about it and put it in some perspective for them, that works better than trying to pretend we don't feel a certain way because they do sense it.
Dwight, what do you want family and friends to know about how they can help or maybe what they should not do?
Well, the most important thing is that we the people need to hold our elected officials accountable going forward, that this is a national crisis economically. It's a disgrace. The people that have been at the helm have let us down. And at this point, you know, when we still hear some elected officials saying things like, oh, these people have been out of work 99 weeks, they don't deserve another extension, they need to go out and get jobs, that just really upsets us. Now, family members, even those working, they know the deal, and they can see the truth that these are hardworking Americans that are suffering right now, and our government has turned their back on us. They've abandoned us. They're willing to help everybody in the world, which I've always backed. I love America, that we've helped other suffering peoples, but look at what they're doing to their own people.
Yeah.
You know, so, but as far as my daughter, yes, at 5 years old in kindergarten, she said to me, she heard me say to my wife, like, oh, when I get back to work, I'm buying new work boots because I was wearing them around the house and I knew they were worn out. But she came to me and said, Daddy, why don't we have money so you can buy new shoes? And I explained to her that we do have money, honey. You know, we pay our bills and all. Daddy will buy new shoes when he gets back to work. But, you know, that's a five-year-old concerned that she picked up on something, that Daddy needs new shoes. I mean, that's pathetic.
Yeah.
That, you know, in 2010, this is life in America for the middle class, you know?
Henry, how concerned do Americans like Dwight need to be that when the economy finally turns, that their skills will still be marketable and current enough to be able to get a job?
I think that's not a huge worry for someone like Dwight. He's a construction worker. He's a skilled tradesman. The construction industry, there's not a lot of change happening right now. So I'm not so worried about that. What I'm worried about is where are the projects going to come from that are going to employ someone with Dwight's skills? You know, I really think, you know, my own view is the government needs to be more aggressive, not worry so much about the deficit, the short-term deficit. Given the underlying rate of growth of the economy in the longer run, that's not a huge problem. And there needs to stop being this Democrat versus Republican business as usual in Washington, and really need to get a consensus that we need to bring this unemployment rate down, find work, meaningful work for these people.
Dwight, we just have a couple of moments left. Is it difficult to be optimistic that that your luck's going to change?
Yes, it is very difficult. In fact, already looking, you know, and I've been looking to change my career. In the past, I've been a licensed in real estate as far as title insurance and all that. The whole real estate industry is a mess right now, too. Alan Greenspan was on TV last weekend warning that we're headed for a double dip. It's going to get worse if the housing doesn't pick up.
Well, Dwight Frazee, many thanks to you for sharing your story. We wish you good luck. This is On Point. I'm Betsy Stark, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the loss of emotional security and personal self-esteem that vanish along with your weekly paycheck when you lose a job. We're talking with Rena Dubin, a psychologist who has been in private practice for 25 years, and with Henry Farber, professor of economics and an expert on labor market issues. And we're also joined now from Lower Waterford, Vermont, by Leslie Mulcahy. She is co-owner with her husband of the Rabbit Hill Inn, and since April 2009, they have been sponsoring a contest, they call it the Pink Slip Getaway, to offer couples who are struggling with the stress of long-term unemployment an opportunity to win an all-expenses-paid stay at Rabbit Hill. So far, they have hosted
hosted 15 pink slip couples. Leslie, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Betsy.
You and Brian have lived through this pain of a long-term unemployment yourselves. What do you remember most about how it affected you?
Well, ours was it was in the early 90s, and it was about 3 years we dealt with unemployment and underemployment. And I'll never forget the level of stress, the anxiety of that time. It creates turmoil within a household, and we don't have children, so we didn't have the complexity of that. But even as a couple, it does pull at it tugs at the fiber of a relationship. And you try so hard to help the person who's unemployed to, you know, keep their spirits up and be the cheerleader and support them any way you can. And then it's frustrating for that support person to find new ways to do it as time goes on. I think that you have certainly described with great detail the intensity and the complexity of unemployment. And my God, it rings true. We remember all of that so very clearly. It's something you really don't forget.
So what inspired this idea for the Pink Slip Getaways?
Well, I think that back last April, it just became very frustrating for us. That's all you heard about. The numbers were climbing. The unemployment numbers were spiking. And there wasn't anybody that came through here that hadn't been touched by it or knew someone in their family that was dealing with that. And quite honestly, we felt like we needed to do something. It strikes a nerve when you have been in the shoes. So because of that, we decided to create this effort to host people. It's what we have to give. And so here we are. Yes, the economy was sliding down. Our industry has noticed that too. So we certainly had the availability here at the inn, and it was our way of giving back, wanting to share the inn. And what happened was back in the 90s when we were going through the unemployment, we actually came to Rabbit Hill for a getaway. We had no business doing it, but we did it anyway, and I'll never forget those 48 hours. It really helped us regain some mental health. It eased our stress. Those 2 days were wonderful. We felt like we were worlds away from everything that had been haunting us. And so now it's been a real pleasure and a joy and an honor to help those couples feel those 48 hours of stress-free time. And hopefully they can just remember what it's like to be a couple and regain a little strength to move forward.
Leslie, stand by for us. I want to go to Rena, because the lesson here seems to be that everybody needs a break, especially under this kind of stress. But if you don't want a trip to Vermont or, you know, the cost of it is out of the question, which it is for most people in this situation, what can people do?
Well, first of all, what a lovely thing they're doing. And maybe for all of us to remember when times get easier that paying forward is a lovely, so thank you to them. But I think that we do it in smaller ways, that it does help. You know, when we're in pain, we get very self-involved, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain, and it's just the way we work. So something that pulls us out for a while and has us step back and has us look at a different geography or a different, even if we can't go to a lovely inn in Vermont, it really does change our perspective, and it can allow couples, for example, to reconnect in a different way about catching their breath, settling in a different way together.
And Leslie, what do these couples have in common? I mean, you've chosen 15, but hundreds more have written to you with their stories. Is there something that you see sort of most often that these couples have in common in their stories?
I do, actually. They're sort of they're trying to deal with managing their life in a very different way. They're trying to regroup. And they're trying to handle stress that they're not familiar with having. Everybody has stress and anxiety, but this is different. You've been now thrown into a pool that you just can't seem to swim yourself out of. And I sense that every story is a little different, but it's amazing how every letter that comes is very much the same as they're trying to grab onto something to help them float through it. Sometimes these letters are written even from not the couples themselves, but from people in their family or neighbors that are worried about them. One other common thing that I noticed was the age, which was really a concern for me. I noticed that anything from about 48 to 55 is now that age group that seems to be really hit hard. And now these people who've worked so hard to establish themselves with their skills and their professional goals are thrown back to the starting line again, trying to figure out how to reinvent themselves. And that's not an easy thing to do. That was a very common thing that I noticed in all of the applicants that we got for our program.
Henry, that's a really interesting point, and I wonder if you would comment on them. At that stage of life, is it particularly hard to reposition yourself and to persuade an employer to take you on?
It's certainly true that older workers who lose jobs have a tough time. They tend to take a larger wage penalty. They don't tend to stay unemployed longer in normal times. I'm not talking about the current recession. But having studied displaced workers over the past 20 to 30 years, the common theme is that if you have a lot invested in a particular industry, and particularly with a particular employer, and you lose that job, you've lost something real that you can't replace easily. A younger worker doesn't have as much invested in a job or an industry and has to start again, but they weren't so high up the ladder. Many older men, in fact, when they lose a job and they're over 50 or 55, wind up retiring early, actually, perhaps at reduced pension. But what you see is they never quite get back into the labor market, some of them.
And, Rena, one thing you hear repeatedly when you talk to men who have lost their jobs is this sense of their identity lost as a provider, which seems to be so important to their psyches.
Yeah, well, it has been an organizing thing, especially for men, certainly in the time that we were growing up. So the ability to translate that into some other way of having value is a challenge. Having said that, it's a good thing to do.
Leslie, what do you think these couples take away from their time with you?
Well, I think that one of the things they take away, they remind themselves of what it's like to be a couple. They forgot that for a while. Sometimes they go back a little bit stronger. They bond a little bit together, and maybe as a team they're able to just take the next leg of this challenge with a little bit more strength. Sometimes they'll actually say to me that they forgot what it was like just to be a couple, because all they do at home is talk about what's going on and dealing with the day-to-day, getting through it, the budgets and all of those things. And here they didn't have to have that conversation. So I think that there is a sense of peace and a little bit of unity within the relationship itself. There's got to be some value there. I know there certainly was for us. When you take yourself away from that for a little while, you might have a little strength to go forward.
Rena, I just wonder if you would play off of that. We talked a little bit before about ways in which you can get away when you don't have resources. But what are the respites? I mean, do people find it in faith? Do they find it in exercise?
I wanted to comment also that what Leslie and her husband are doing are also providing a container for people. They're holding something and giving something that sustaining for the people who come there. So other people can do that too. That sense that you're not all alone in something, that somebody really cares, and here's somebody they don't even know that's having an impact. So not to miss again that those acts of saying I care and I'm here and what can I do, or let me give you a break here, that can really matter.
That can be very
and make us feel less alone.
Mm-hmm. And what do you hear from the people you talk to about how they cope through this time, or how they get themselves a break, or do they sort of lack the ability to provide that for themselves at such a stressful time?
Well, again, it ranges, but when we've lost our way, and some people have, when they have people around them that can help remind them who they are, remind them what they have, just be present with them, not judge. That really can help people begin to find their way again. People who've been resilient before will be resilient again.
Well, Leslie Mulcahy of the Rabbit Hill Inn, thank you so much for joining us today from Lower Waterford, Vermont. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Betsy.
Well, let's hear from another caller. Phoebe is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Phoebe, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been unemployed for a year. I'm a single mother with an 11-year-old. I had a business that went under with the recession. And I wanted to address the psychological impacts of being unemployed. Obviously, day to day, it's depressing, you're aimless, you're not being productive. And I think there need to be better ways for the unemployed to help each other day to day and get together and sort of help motivate each other and remember to have fun during the time of unemployment. For many people, the first time they've had time away from work for many, many years. And often when I go out and do something, go to the beach, go take a walk in the woods, I feel guilty because I know other people are out there working. And we need to remember to let ourselves have fun during this time. It is a time in your life when one thing you do have, maybe not money, maybe not being productive or motivated, but you do have time, and so find ways to enjoy it when you can. That's what I'm doing, even though it is really depressing day to day.
Thank you, Phoebe. Appreciate your call. And Henry, we also heard Phoebe talk about this idea of people who are out of work finding a way to support each other because, you know, there isn't much else around in terms of infrastructure and support. You know, is it time for Americans to take a page from the Europeans and offer some more help?
Let me start by saying I'm glad Phoebe called because one thing that's gotten lost a bit here in the discussion, which has seemed to center around couples, is that the unemployment rate, let's call it the zero employment rate in households that only have one adult, single-headed households, is astoundingly high. It's 30% to 50%. And it shouldn't be lost that those people do not have a partner to turn to either have another job or or even just to share what they're feeling, and that can be very difficult. With regard to the question you asked, I think it is time for us to recognize that people who are long-term unemployed are often long-term unemployed for reasons beyond their control. And as a society, we need to reach out to these people and provide some support. Some European countries do this quite effectively. Others are more united, let's call it United States-like. And for me, I would be comfortable for us as a first step, certainly extending the unemployment insurance benefits and removing this 99er phenomenon from the lexicon right now. And beyond that, I think we need to figure out a way to have some level of support that's not contingent on qualifying for unemployment insurance.
Tall order at a time of such focus on the deficit, but that those unemployment benefits really are, a vital lifeline to people out of work. Rena, how long-lasting are the scars from this kind of experience, or do you think most people will be able to rebound if they are able to find work?
I do think most people will be able to rebound. And the scarring, again, is in also the other side of that is what are the resiliencies that are learned. So that's going to vary. Some of the scarring can be the more fear, more sense of insecurity, of not being able to be sure what to be counted on. Those things can heal. And I think the more that people have a chance to talk to each other, you know, what Phoebe was just talking about and Henry around support systems, you know, most Starbucks these days have people hanging out in them trying to, they've formed informal networks. I think all of that will lessen the scarring.
But Henry, do you think this problem gets worse before it gets better?
I think it's going to be a long, slow recovery, and there are people who are unemployed now who will obviously be unemployed even longer. I don't see – I'm not much of a prognosticator, but I can't imagine the base unemployment rate is going to get much higher than it is right now. But I don't see a robust jobs recovery in our near future.
Rena, we have a lot of people listening today who are out of work and who are struggling with the despair of not being able to find a job. What would you say by way of encouragement?
Well, first I'd say how understandable it is to be living with that and how hard it is. And I guess the encouragement I would say, it's been said different ways today, is that we really do need a village in some ways. It's not just children who need a village to really see how we can stay connected. People have mentioned spirituality. They've mentioned relationships, family. Those things really are important. Do we really need them?
And Henry, what would you say are the implications, the most immediate implications of having such a huge portion of our workforce sidelined?
Well, I would say there's the individual level, household level stress is an important issue. And for the older workers, the sooner they can get back to work, the better, just so that they can save what they have and resurrect their clear path to retirement. For the younger workers, I'm actually more concerned about the long run consequences, because even if the jobs come back in a bit, they are again missing this opportunity to find their career path, and I worry about that.
Well, Henry Farber and Rena Dubin, our thanks to you for being with us this hour. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Betsy Stark, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.